it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now, here's Leslie.
Good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you are an art maker, an art breaker, an art faker, or an art partaker, welcome all, because of course, all are welcome to Homegrown, your show about local art, brought to you by the Blue Moon Diner. I'm not Leslie, I'm the one they call Clinton, and I'm here with the lady who looks Sunday morning square in the face, Leslie M. Scott Jones.
Well, good morning, Clinton. How are you?
All right, Leslie, how are you?
You are in an exceptionally good mood this morning. I like it.
Do ya?
Yeah, I do.
I am here to do things that you like.
Ooh, okay. Well, I got a list. I can't say it on the air, but I've got a list.
Okay. Well, then, warm up those knee pads. Okay. Just getting things right up.
Pun intended.
So to speak. We're going to start the show the way we always start the show, with our weekly Trump-Pence report. Yeah. Big news in Trump-Pence land.
Oh, God.
The slots are being filled. People are being suggested. Some of them need Senate confirmation. Some of them don't.
Yeah, I know. I'm really scared about the ones that don't.
Some of them are just there.
I know.
That's 4 years right there, baby. Just to give you a little rundown of some of the people. Department of Treasury head Steve Mnuchin, former head of Goldman Sachs, or not head, but former guy from Goldman Sachs, also foreclosure machine back in 2008. Remember 2008? Remember that?
Yes. Yeah. You remember that? You know, when our whole economy went to, well, what's the word I'm looking for? Yeah,
right,
that.
Right. Remember when Trump said that he was going to not, that those
right.
people.
I know.
I think he said something negative about Goldman Sachs, didn't he?
Right? He
maybe
said something. I don't know.
Maybe,
there was like a swamp or
boom,
something? I don't know.
Potential Department of Commerce head Wilbert Ross. This guy flips bankrupt companies and has sent a lot of stuff overseas. That's not going to be a problem with Trump at all.
No.
Potential Department of Education. Love this one. Betsy DeVos. Advocate. A billionaire. By the way, all these three people, billionaires. Billionaires. All right. Betsy DeVos. Advocate of charter schools. Advocate of voucher programs. And union buster, including teachers' unions.
And she is not an educator. She's not in it. She's never taught anything.
I think she's going to teach us about something. I tell you, we're going to be learning stuff. Potential head of Department of Health and Human Services. That's Representative Tom Price from good old
right.
Georgia.
Yeah.
Anti-choice, anti-Planned Parenthood, anti-Obamacare. He is just, and one of our favorite people here, National Security Advisor Michael Flynn.
Hold on. Can I just say this guy, even veterans don't like this guy. Okay. They do not want a general in charge. Like, come on, people. Really?
He was fired as the head of DIA and is a radical, anti-radical Islamist. And I can't say for sure that he has a problem distinguishing Muslims from radical Muslims, but I don't know. Some people say that. Some people, it could be. Who knows? Is that? And anyway, so collection of billionaires and insiders and right wing people. It's just looking great. So today's nonviolent protest suggestion for all the here's my suggestion: get an email address, not your own email address. Get a fake email address. Because you got to be careful. And send an email to Republican members of the Congress and the Senate with just one thing. A little clip from Van Halen's Running with the Devil.
No!
Running with the Devil!
Yeah!
There you go. That's our nonviolent protest situation suggestion for this week.
Wow, that's a good one, Clinton. I really like that one.
And here's the thing. If they get it, they'll be offended. If not, maybe they're Van Halen fans.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Oh, my God.
Who knows?
I think we should go to our first guest.
Let's go to our first guest.
Yes! Oh, my God! Oh, my God. I'm so excited.
Our first guests come to us from Live Arts theater, where they are bringing the theater, and strangely enough, it's live and kind of artistic at the same time. Welcome to Homegrown for the first time.
Kind of artistic,
making it artistic. At least it's not fartistic. That's the that's the important thing.
We got backstage areas for that.
I thought that's why they had the air circulation going on.
Right.
When it worked.
We've got Liz Howard, Perry Medlin, and Deborah Ehrenstein here from Guys and Dolls. How are you guys?
Great. Good morning.
Good morning. Nice to see you. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pull that back just a little bit.
You're going to get that mic a little closer to my face.
And get that mic just a little bit closer to your face.
Thanks.
Theater, you should be used to it. So, if I may ask, if I may do the rundown, if I may do the throwdown, if I may ask the question that I'm sure fans of Guys and Dolls and fans of live arts, if there are people who are the same, have been asking, live arts, Guys and Dolls? Really?
Yeah. Why the surprise?
Because live arts, for a lot of live arts' career, live arts has been a place that has presented itself as sort of the quirky, sort of the outre, the off-center, the edgy theater. And it always felt like there was an unspoken list of traditional theater war horses that live arts would rather die than put on. And they've done Broadway shows before. They've done many Broadway shows before. But you would think, like, they're never going to do South Pacific. They're never going to do, you know, any Rodgers and Hammerstein. And you would think, like, you're not going to see live arts do The Music Man. And you would have thought, I would have bet... 12 will get you 7. That they would never do Guys and Dolls. Deborah, assistant director, help me out here.
Well, thank you, Clinton, for that question. I don't know if you've met our director, Ray Nedzel. Ray is a magical, outside-of-the-box director, thinker, performer, creator. And so with him at the helm of Guys and Dolls, it's not the Guys and Dolls that your mama knew about. Let's just say that. It is edgy in its own way. It has a contemporary spin on it. The set is over the top, amazing. We have some incredible talent. And so I think Live Arts has decided to present something that people are familiar with, but in a whole new way. So it's bringing an audience to Live Arts who will hopefully stay and then see some of the more alternative, edgy things that we are often traditionally thought of as presenting. That's my take on it.
So is this going to be a really twisted Guys and Dolls? I mean, has he really given a load of quirk to this? Or
I feel like, from my perspective, Guys and Dolls is usually something that is very stylized from the time period in which it's set in that 50s. And this is a much more real Guys and Dolls. If Meisner had ever directed Guys and Dolls, this would probably be how it would have turned out. It's much more real instead of that kind of really, really quirky.
I really want luck to be a lady. I don't believe you.
Exactly.
I don't believe that.
Why
you want
do you want
to
be a lady? Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, that's my Sanford Meisner impersonation.
Here. That was a good one.
That was after the operation on his throat.
Right.
I don't believe you want luck to be a lady. But anyway, I've stopped you.
That's what I got.
That's what you got. All right. So has the script been doctored at all to bring it up to date? Because there are some aspects of the script that certainly feel... I mean, this show's got some age on it. Damon Runyon's original stories, 20s, 30s, something like that. Right, those are the stories on which for those of you who don't know, the stories on which the musical was based, and the musical itself, mid-50s?
Opened in 1950, actually.
So barely the 50s. And it's got some I mean, it's got some age on it, and don't you find that that in terms of some of the themes, or at least some specifically some of the male-female attitudes that the age shows?
Great. I was trying to let Liz speak first, but she just is going to defer to me. So I guess that the attitudes really haven't changed all that much.
I love it. What you couldn't see, I love it that Perry turns to the woman who is playing the stripper in the show. And she's like, nope,
I'm not touching that.
She's a classy dancer. Okay, let's get this straight.
And I was actually going to speak from the perspective of our two characters. So I play Nathan Detroit, who runs a floating crap game in New York, and has been engaged for 14 years to this entertainer, Adelaide, and they have this relationship that it's so back and forth because
this clothing optional entertainer.
Right. My favorite line of Adelaide's, go ahead. It's your line. You got it.
Which I thought it was due to the account that I dance with hardly any clothes on, which is what I normally wear.
Right, it just keeps going. But they have this great relationship that Nathan's not going to do anything without thinking of Adelaide first, because he really does. He loves her that way. And Adelaide wears the pants in that relationship. I mean, when they're around each other, it's
the figurative pants, because she doesn't wear pants though all that much.
No, she really, yeah.
Correct.
She hardly wears any clothes when she's actually dancing.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead, Deb.
Well, I just wanted to address what Perry had said earlier about us really not just doing the kind of cartoon character running land, but really looking at these characters. And when you do that and unpack them a little, you get past what you're talking about, Clinton, around stereotypical male-female relationships. And you see, for example, Sky and Sarah, who are the lead male and female love interests, who end up falling in love with each other in spite of everything that they had held important or thought that they did. They find each other underneath of that, and there's a transformation there. And it's really lovely that she had thought, I will never love a gambler, and he had thought, I will never love a woman, I only want to gamble, and something breaks through for them around their love. And it's actually really beautiful. And so, yes, there is calling women dolls and, you know, things that would be considered potentially sexist. But if you can look past that and see under it, there are really human stories here that are quite touching and mm-hmm. sweet.
And when Sky even goes about trying to you know, seduce this this woman, this Salvation Army sergeant, he goes about it in the way that he knows how, which is a very, you know, classic, over-masculine way about doing it, and it completely blows up in his face.
Right.
And I think that's another part of the message is that, you know, it's interesting to see how when you do break this down, that doesn't work. He has to kind of come up with a completely different way of going about it, and that transforms him in the long run into a completely different person.
Yeah. So, Fidel Castro's dead.
Yeah. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about an aspect of, you know, my life that I, you know, always would, you know, always thought would change, but has been an aspect of my life since I've had a life. Mm. Did you, and the first U.S., the first direct flights from U.S. to Cuba are happening now for, mm-hmm. in decades. Was there any, and the reason I'm saying, for the people who don't know the show, one of the things that Sky eventually does is take Sarah to Cuba, and it's Batista's Cuba, right? It's this pre-revolutionary Cuba, probably mob-owned at this point Cuba, where it's, you know, nightlife and fun. Was there any thought to try to bring in today's Cuba, or was there just not time?
I mean, I don't think so, because it is so set in when it is set that I feel like it's not really being honest to the source material to try to put that kind of different perspective on it. I mean, I know what
you really need to be honest to the source material to a certain extent.
And what's interesting is actually one of our cast members just came back from Havana. And
for Thanksgiving.
Yeah, she was there for Thanksgiving, and so she brought back a lot of pictures to help immerse us into what this world that they went and visited at the time. So it's actually kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm. What was that like?
I asked her what she actually ate on Thanksgiving, because, you know, that's an American holiday. It's not something that they celebrate in Cuba. And she goes, you know, it really wasn't like a normal Thanksgiving by any means. But she said that the trip down, the island itself is the, you know, beaches are gorgeous and whatnot. But I think it's probably very. She said that she had a lot of conversations with just the people, and the attitudes about Castro were just so diverse. How you have those who just saw him as this incredible, savior of their nation, and then you have other people who, you know, really were who felt the oppression under him, and it's interesting to see the different attitudes that she came across in just like a 3 or 4 day trip.
Yeah, you know, it's been so fascinating the past few days listening to news about Cuba and hearing people both outside of Cuba and inside of Cuba talk about Cuba. I can't imagine what it would be like to live in a country where you were just being watched, where, say, your emails or your phones were being listened to by the government. That would just, I mean, thank goodness we live in a country that just values liberty.
Thank goodness.
Freedom of the press and things like that.
I'm
and
so
that,
glad I can say whatever I want to say.
Right,
and not
on the radio? That
about.
Would be that. Thank goodness.
Yeah. That would be bleeping awesome.
It would be bleeping awesome, wouldn't it?
Hello, this is Brian Weimer of the Ix Art Park, and you're listening to Homegrown, 94.7 WPVC.
17 minutes past the hour. As Brian said, this is 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And if you're just tuning in, hey, welcome. This is Homegrown, your show about local art. We're here with cast members and the assistant director from Live Arts' upcoming production of Guys and Dolls. So nice to have you guys here.
And we're on
Thank
Facebook
you.
Live.
Woo! Live Facebook.
And apparently we're putting this on Facebook Live. All right.
So happy about that.
I'm so thrilled. Liz.
Yes.
I'm going to question directly to you. Mm-hmm. So, one of the things... So, one of the things about Guys and Dolls, one of the things that Guys and Dolls have given us over the years, over the decades in which it's run in various theaters all over the nation and all over the world, various types of theaters, even high school theaters, is it's given us a show where women of all types and all levels of modesty play strippers.
Again with that stripper word.
I don't know what a stripper is.
So,
I'm not...
an adesius.
Oh, okay.
An adesius. So, what was that like? What was it like auditioning for? Did you think about it? Were there questions? I mean,
As a modest person myself, I don't know. I didn't think of that aspect of it. I thought of Adelaide as being a person, and this is what she did, and this is what she does, and I didn't really think of you know, words aren't coming to my face.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Just take something off.
Then. Right. Oh, why would I just? Okay, I'm just gonna get a little.
Good thing we're on Facebook Live.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. I feel That's much better. More comfortable now. Thank right. you. You know, auditioning for Adelaide was just such a great experience for me. Cause first of all, I didn't think I'd get the part, but, you know, isn't that everyone's mentality?
Right.
But nope, not Perry's. No, not he knew. Perry. He knew he was. Yeah, he knew he was going to get the part of Adelaide. Little did he know.
I did.
Yeah, I mean, learning who she is is the greatest part of the whole audition. Well, the audition, you get the part. Sorry, you audition and get the part, and finding out who she is great because.
She just hit me because she wants me to talk now.
She's one of the great parts. I mean, it's go ahead, Deborah.
Well, I would just venture to say that the way we are presenting the Hotbox Girls and Adelaide are really as a nice counter to the sort of seedy gambler
Basket
underworld. Right. that they are sort of the fun, the festive, the just sort of wide open, creative women, and they're not portrayed as you would
really
think.
The place is called the Hot Box.
Right. Well, this was the time when the microwave was invented, as you know, Clinton.
That's what we're going with.
So it's a historical reference to the opposite of the ice box, which is where in the olden days people kept their frozen goods. So the hot box is where we launched the birth of the hot pocket, eventually, that we know now.
Dig that hole a little bit.
So I would just like to say that these are girls of high virtuous standards who are just trying to make an honest living.
Right. Exactly.
Liz, I think she broke Liz.
So these are creative women with a slightly flaky but crusty exterior.
These were extremely creative women that never went to school for shorthand that needed to get a career for themselves.
There you go.
There you go. And they found that they can, you know, they can move in time to music. And so what better place than the hot box?
Than the microwave.
Than the microwave. Sorry, than the microwave.
Yeah.
All right.
So I just want you to know, your director says...
Oh, God.
Your director is watching this, and he says that Castro is an anagram for actors.
It's true, it is. That's our director, folks. That's Ray.
The depth.
Chew on that, America.
You did not know, did you? You did not know.
You didn't.
Nope. Took the live arts production to throw that down.
Oh.
So, Perry, the character of Nathan Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Nathan Detroit, not unique, but certainly uncommon. In Broadway history, because he's one of the few, outside of Fiddler on the Roof, he is one of the few explicitly Jewish characters that you get in Broadway.
Which is so funny because Frank Sinatra played him in the film.
Which is so funny because Frank Sinatra played him in the film.
Exactly.
And they did not change
any of
the
it.
Lyrics to the song Sumi,
right,
where he's saying Yiddish.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that the Yiddish he says in Sumi, he says, you know, all right, already it's true, so new, which, you know, can be heard as like S-O-N-E-W, like so new, but it's actually in the script is so new, N-U, which I actually got some coaching on from a coworker of mine who was like, just so you know, like that, what this really means is like, you know, you've heard this before. Tell me something different, you know.
Yeah.
So that was great that I kind of got that clarification on it. And it, literally, the script says it one way and then the score says it another. So, like, which do you want? But yeah, this has been a role that one of my favorite interpretations has always been Nathan Lane's. I've thought just love the way that he interpreted the particular role, which you'll probably be able to tell if you come see the show that I take a lot of my inspiration from him. I'm a very loud, brashy person.
You?
Not, I know. I'm normally
no.
so reserved.
He's such a little delicate flower.
I'm a delicate little flower. That's true. So yeah, this is a stretch for me. I don't know. I hope I do it justice.
I'm sure you will. So thanks. You guys, I heard you guys talking earlier. You guys are going to sing something for us?
Are we?
Are we?
Yes, you're going to sing something for us.
Baby,
I heard
oh
you.
Oh, my gosh.
No, not that one. Well, what we were talking about earlier is that, so the composer for this show, Frank Lesser, we were talking about other stuff that he wrote, and we came across that he also had written Baby, It's Cold Outside. And that song is... It's just not as cute as we, you know, as I thought
no,
it was as a kid.
It's not.
Listen,
you know,
to the words.
It's a rape about to happen.
It's
is what that is. Yeah.
No, it's just date rape.
Oh, just. Thanks just for that clarification,
light,
Barry.
Light date rape.
No, sing so something.
Sing something?
Sing something.
Something. I don't know. Do you want to promise me this? No.
No.
She doesn't.
Come see it.
Yeah, you gotta buy a ticket for that.
Didn't prepare.
We did not.
Indeed. Indeed, 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 indeed.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Liz.
So,
broken earlier. It's okay.
Deborah, what's been one of the biggest challenges bringing this show to life?
Well, keeping up with Ray's brain has been a big challenge for me as an assistant director. He is just on fire and is working incredibly quickly and fast with a ton of material, a ton of a big cast, a pretty quick turnaround.
He's probably working right now. You guys have tech today, don't you?
That's right. Oh, yes. Today is a long haul. But, you know, I think for me it's been an incredible experience seeing all of these pieces come together. I'm a new to the directing world person, and so watching it go from just music rehearsals to just choreography and then feeding in scene work and acting and watching these characters emerge has just been incredibly magical, and it reminds me why we do theater and why people love to come see theater, because they're really transported into a different world, and that's what we're hoping to do with this show. So, and appropriate for the whole family.
Oh, yeah.
No actual stripping occurs, people.
No.
That's
like,
Clinton.
Strippers still wore like corsets and stockings and stuff in this time. So like it's pretty PG.
It is, absolutely.
Actually, in the 50s, didn't strippers, they just put on more clothes.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
As the act went on.
That's right.
Yeah. Live band, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there is an incredible live band. They've rehearsed with them once, and today they'll have another rehearsal tonight with the live band with a bass and a keyboard and a horn, a trumpet.
And a reed player as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Our musical
beautiful.
Director, Kristen Baltus, has done an outstanding job, both with putting this music on its feet and as well as just putting this band together. They sound awesome. It's so much fun to sing with them.
So you rehearsed with them just once. There's a great audio clip. I think it's also a video clip of Rex Harrison on Broadway preparing for My Fair Lady, and it's his first time in front of the orchestra, and he's been rehearsing up till then with just the piano, right? Mm-hmm. Just the accompanist. And they go and they do that, and he's stopping them from the stage saying, What was that? What was that little fiddly thing? I'm not used to that little fiddly thing. You can hear the director off. Rex Love, that's when you come in. You hear that little fiddly. Well, I'm not going to be able to come in with that little fiddly thing. I'm not used to that little fiddly thing.
Well, luckily we have Kristen when she goes, and then here parts of
right.
It works out because we know when that stuff is going to come in.
She's been beatboxing for a few weeks. Yeah.
Oh. I was wondering why it was guys with a Z.
Guys.
Guys and dolls. That sounds like a live arts production, right?
Right. The last S in dolls is actually a dollar sign, like Kesha.
There you go. Did you know how to play craps before doing the show?
No. So, well,
did you learn how to play craps?
Actually, so yeah, I did learn, but I learned right beforehand, and it had nothing to do with this show. But I was on my honeymoon, and I went on a cruise, and they had like a casino on the boat, and I saw them all shooting. And so I just kind of stood there, and I was like, I'm just going to stand here and watch because I want to learn how to do this. And so I vaguely learned how to shoot craps before coming onto this show, but like I don't think I would actually put any money down on it because I don't think I know it that well.
Right. There's not much to know. It's just an elaborate way of losing the money that you put down.
Right. Exactly.
Guys, thank it's you like so D&D much for game. Coming on the show. Liz Howard, Perry Medlin, Deborah Arnstein, please let us know the what, where, if somebody can, the what, where, when, and why, and how of the show.
Absolutely. We open this Friday, December 9th,
dun, dun, dun.
At Live Arts. You can go to livearts.org and purchase tickets online. It's super easy. And we run through I think the middle of January.
Right, we take a break for the holidays.
Right.
We do a couple of weeks in December, we take a break, and then we come back for a couple weeks in January.
That's right. And it's an outstanding show. You don't want to miss it. Bring your friends, mm-hmm. bring your family, come more than once.
We run Wednesdays through Sundays. We have Sunday matinees.
That's
Wednesday
right.
is Pay What You Can night.
That's right.
Which is awesome and a great opportunity for, you know, if that's always the night I end up coming. I like Pay What You Can night. But it's definitely going to be a show that I hope people are talking about for a while.
Yeah, for me, absolutely. Usually Pay What You Can night is in my head Pay If You Can night.
That's, right.
That's me. Thank you guys. You guys are fun and a half. Thanks for being such good sports through a lot of hardcore questions. If the show is half as fun as you guys are here, it's going to be a blast and a half. Guys and dolls at Live Arts. This is Homegrown, your show about local art. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about just some of the other artistic things. Once again, this is Homegrown, your show about local art. Make sure you stay tuned to us, because after this, it's the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. He's talking to a little unknown politician named David Toscano, who may just be the Democratic leader of the Virginia House of Delegates. But before we get to that, let's get to just some of the artistic things you've got waiting for you this week. Currently running from now until December 11th, the Charlie Brown Christmas at Four County Players. Once more, Christmas time is here. Also currently running until December 30th, the American Shakespeare Center's Holiday Season. That's their same old wonderful, wonderful shows. A Christmas Carol, The Santaland Diaries, and The 12 Dates of Christmas. The 12 Dates of Christmas. If you haven't seen these, if you've seen them, then you know how good they are. See them again. If you haven't seen them, really give them a chance. They're so wonderful. Especially The Santaland Diaries and The 12 Dates of Christmas. So fun. So fun. December 9th is Let There Be Light at PVCC, the Piedmont Virginia Community College. A collection of light-oriented artistic events by local artists. Wonderful, magical night. December 10th, Charlottesville Ballet presents the Nutcracker Suite at the Culpeper Baptist Church. And from December 15th to 18th, across the mountain in Stanton, it's Elf Junior, the musical. Yes, you're giving me...
I'm sorry, Elf Junior?
Elf Junior. It's the kids' version of Elf the musical based on the movie.
No.
Elf, yes.
No, they didn't do
Yes,
that.
They did. Not only did they do a musical based on the movie Elf, they did a kids' version.
Holy mother of... Okay.
And you can see it from December 15th to 18th at Shannon Arts in Stanton, Virginia. Here are just some of the musical options you've got available to you today. Travis Elliott at Rapture. Also, Michael Clement, Thomas Gunn at Glasshouse Winery. And Gild the Morn at Yearbook Taco's Goth Night. December 7th, Jazz Collective No. 9 at Fellini's. The Aaron Lunsford Trio at The Bebedero. December 8th, Tara Mills hosts the Pro Renata Farm Brewery Songwriter Night this week, featuring Will Overman, Lee Cussman, Turtles Wadlow, and Holly Allen. On December 8th, also Coda and Marie from Chamomile and Whiskey are at Dirty Nelly's. The Michael Ellswick Gatherings at Fellini's. Super Vixen plays at Rapture. On December 9th, it's the open mic night at the James River Brewery. Girl Choir, Matt Carreri, and the X-Friends, and Woods Running are at the Ante Room. Also December 9th, John Sampson and Crooked Run at Wild Wolf Brewery, and Bob Bonetta at Fellini's. Sam Wilson, Skylar Fisk, and Carl Anderson join for the Restless Hearts Tour at the Southern Cafe Music Hall on December 9th. Don't want to miss that one. So much music going on this week. It's just sick. Also, December 10th, Alex Caton at Albemarle Cider Works, Robert Jospe Trio at The Bebedero, LG and Friends going on, Ann Lahr at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub, Joe Lawler and Friends, that means the Cows and the Jolly Llamas. Yes, they have just listened. And
the Jolly Llamas?
The Jolly Llamas. They have just made it onto my list of favorite local band names. They're doing a benefit for the Sexual Assault Advocacy Fund.
Of course.
A great, great, great thing to do with some great people. December 10th, again, the Pollux at Batesville Market. Of course, every Monday, it's the singer-songwriter night at the local. Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Also, the open mic night at the Anteroom. Every Wednesday, open mic night at Pro Renata Farm Brewery. The Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And on Thursday,
head on. Speaking of Millers, it's the John Dearth Quintet, because every once in a while, you just got to come down to Dearth. And those are just some of the many artistically wonderful things going on in our artistically wonderful town. If you are an artist and have an event and you'd like people to know about it, we would like them to know about it. We would like to be the ones to tell them about it. Tell us about it first. Contact us through our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/homegrownWPVC. And, or you can send it to us at our email address, homegrown947@gmail.com. 36 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is Homegrown, your show about local arts, brought to you by the Blue Moon Diner. Blue Moon Diner, breakfast all day, every day, with brunch on the weekends, and carefully constructed diner food on the weekday evenings and afternoons. And speaking of the evenings, Blue Moon Diner is nice enough to welcome visiting and local artists for years and years and years. This week, on Monday, it's Ian Fitzgerald from Providence, Rhode Island. On Wednesday, Jim Wave, doing the country like it was done before when country wasn't cool.
That's right.
Thursday, it's Richmond's Mackenzie Rourke and Sarah Wilcox. And Friday, from Nashville, Tennessee, Jerry Castle.
Wow.
Blue Moon Diner, 421 West Main Street.
That's a nice little lineup this week.
That's a nice little lineup this week.
Right?
Good gosh. Stay tuned afterwards for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call. Your host, Rick Moore. He's going to be talking to Dave Toscano, Democratic leader of the Virginia House of Delegates. Is there a Democratic Party anymore?
No.
I thought that was outlawed.
Well, you know, I'm sure.
I thought we were just going to get rid of that.
Well, I think that I'm hoping Rick will ask Dave that question.
Maybe he will.
Yeah, we could get an answer to that today. Today. So
we could.
Like, you know,
what's he going to do? Get a real job?
No, he has a real job. He's a lawyer. He's actually been my lawyer.
Oh, the punchlines I could come up with that one, but we're just going to go.
Hey.
We're just going to go to our next guest.
No, I'm very thankful for him to getting me out of my first marriage. It was very lovely of him to do.
I think there were many people who were thankful to Dave for getting you out of your first marriage.
Yes, because I was mean, right? Yeah. I was not in a good place,
right?
It was
not a good thing.
It was not a good thing.
It was not a good thing
yes.
at all.
He helped a lot of people by doing that.
Our next guest, welcome to Homegrown from Second Street Gallery, Matt P. Shelton and Nikolai M. Knoll. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm well. How's it going, Nikolai?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. So this is a very interesting collaboration. Tell us about it and tell us how you guys came to work together.
Nikolai and I met in... Well, thanks for letting us be here and talk about this, first of all. We met in graduate school at VCU in 2010 and... in the painting department there, painting and printmaking department there. And I had just moved to Richmond from New Orleans, where I'd lived for a few years. And Nikolai, I knew, was from Trinidad. And so I just kind of started creeping on him to talk about Carnival. And that you reminded me the other day that that's like how we first started conversing.
Yeah. Well, it was about Carnival, and it was also about representation politics.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, totally. Well, and so
talk more about that. Carnival, yeah. And how does Carnival and representation politics fit in with each other, or were those just two separate discussions?
Well, no, they kind of grew out of the other, because we view Carnival as like very political. It serves a very specific function within a society. It's sort of like a stopgap valve, you know, to let off some steam.
Mm.
And we were just kind of curious about how that operated in New Orleans, as opposed to how it operated in
Trinidad.
Yeah, in Trinidad,
in Spain. Yeah, and so in New Orleans, like there's official crews and then there's unofficial crews, and everything is kind of in conversational in a sense. Like,
and there's Ted Cruz. No, wait, that's Bobby Jindal.
Yeah, yeah, Bobby Jindal. Bobby Jindal is featured in the... Actually, Bobby Jindal is featured in the show.
Is he?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he is featured in the show in one of the prints that is hanging from the ceiling in the show. There's an image of a man who looks like very upright, and it's a painting. It's actually a photo of a digital photo of a painting, and this is a famous portrait of Bobby Jindal that hung in the governor's mansion. It wasn't the official portrait, but it hung in the governor's mansion. It was remarkable because it looks like a whiteface portrait. Yeah, so it was pretty interesting. But yeah, so back to Carnival. but relevant. Something that I would want to talk to Nikolai about is like, hey, in New Orleans, like the old line crews, the like ones that represent economic power and former political power, are like only feature white men, but they all wear masks that are peach colored. So they have holes, and it's like they're wearing a white mask over their white face.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's really interesting and weird. But at the same time, everybody's there. Everybody's out of their minds having a good time. And it's a real the crowds are fairly representative of the city as a whole. So there's I think that's like a kind of link is the kind of being in the belly of the beast of kind of knowing that conditions are within the city are not necessarily just or fair, you know, but at the same time like celebrating and dancing and having this party together at the same time rather than the typical I feel like kind of like maybe Anglo kind of approach to a party would be like, well, we have to fix all everything and then we can celebrate. But this is more of like a I don't know if it's like, and we talk about like what the traditions are that lead to that. Is it the Creole influence, or is it French, is it African? What makes it possible for people to kind of like have that joy inside their tears, kind of.
Yeah, but it's also sort of like, you know, in our collaboration, we talk about despair, and Carnival in a way is a way to deal with despair,
mm-hmm.
Especially in Trinidad, where a lot of the Carnival portrayals grew out of like crimes mm-hmm. or like fear,
mm-hmm.
And they often deal with issues about mortality. And safety,
mm-hmm.
But what has happened? But it's also a really good barometer of where the society is at, because over time, our carnival changes. Mm-hmm. So it's actually going through a very significant period of change right now, where previously what people referred to as traditional carnival is very kind of masculine and violent,
mm-hmm.
And since like women's empowerment and more women having like the economic security to buy costumes and to participate in the festival,
mm-hmm.
it's become far more safe and far more sort of like feminine, and it's a point of contention for people who obviously who have trouble with like, you know, like the changing circumstances of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, it just kind of shows what's happening in the society.
Mm. Changes in Carnival reflect the changes in society.
Yeah.
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 So it's really interesting that you bring up the laughter through tears thing, because mm-hmm. that's definitely something that is part of the diaspora of the African people. You know, I think probably Maya Angelou was the best at expressing it. I mean, she wrote an entire book.
Yeah.
I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, and mm-hmm. and her reasoning is that it has no choice. That's the that's the only outlet
mm-hmm.
that you have. Mm-hmm. And so I saw the show yesterday. I walked through, and I think the most striking.
And give us the title of the show.
Okay. So the title is Contested Bodies, mm-hmm. How Race, Privilege, and Oppression Relate to Economics and Opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I think, and it's one of the bigger pieces, but the hoodie,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's huge. Mm-hmm. Like, it mm-hmm. takes up half a wall.
Mm-hmm.
But from far away, like when you first walk in the door, you just see this big black square.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you get closer to it, the details become more evident, and you can see that it's like a hoodie laid out, and it's and it's really quite intricate, like with the laces and everything. But it's black on black. So what were you thinking in that? Like, I know what it said to me, but what were you thinking for that piece?
You want to go for it, Matt?
Yeah, I can go for that. Well, Nikolai executed most of that piece, and it uses... So one of the things, I'll backtrack for just a second first, one of the things that we do within our collaboration is that we're able to take materials and processes that we maybe do, we explore individually, but then we kind of can share them with each other. It kind of gives us permission to kind of like maybe do something that we wouldn't have normally have done.
Right.
But Nikolai has been working with this paste that he makes out of graphite, powdered graphite and linseed oil. And
And I was wondering what it was made of. Yeah. I was like, it's like kind of luminous, but it's all the same color. But at the same time, there's a lot of like different tone to it and texture to it.
So, and he applies it with this. And I think there's a wonderful kind of like vigor and toughness, but also delicacy with the way that it's applied, which I think relates to what we're talking about in terms of like joy and tears and things like that. So there's a lot of pleasure and pain within the application of that material. But the photo, the reference of that hoodie, which is, you know, kind of stretched out like a
it's in the Jesus pose.
It's in a Jesus pose.
Yeah.
I wasn't gonna say that, but it's from the trial of George Zimmerman. And so the photo reference for that is Trayvon's hoodie, and the way that it was displayed at the trial was it was framed in this giant frame.
Like I remember
this,
that.
And you can see, and when we came across this image, I had not seen it before, and I was like, wow. Because I don't have a TV, and I only listen to NPR. So so it's like you don't like see stuff like this
and
all the time.
And that's why we like you, man. Yeah. That's why.
But that's, we're talking about them. He's not listening to us.
I do listen to you guys.
See?
Yeah, we all need a break sometimes. The alternative to the alternative.
Yes, that's us.
Yeah. But yeah, do you want to say anything about that piece in particular?
Oh, well, I mean, we talk about permissions and when
I think giving each other permission.
Yeah. When I was thinking about doing this work, you know, I'm always like sort of conflicted because I remember like sort of black solidarity movements in the '60s and '70s and like anti-apartheid movements, and it seemed at that moment that all people of color in the diaspora were, you know, we had permission to advocate for black people everywhere.
Yes.
And currently I don't feel as though that's as clear a thing. You know? So I'm seeing a lot of these extrajudicial killings of young black men in the United States, and I'm in the Caribbean, and I'm wondering, you know, all right, what's my, you know, how do I talk about this? How do I express concern about it? And Matt being here and Matt doing the kind of work that he does and sharing the kind of concerns that we share, it sort of gives me permission to sort of like talk about my distress and my grief about these things. And not, this is not saying that, you know, similar things aren't happening elsewhere.
Right.
But I think that the United States holds a kind of moral position in the world. And so that things that happen to people who look like me in this place brings me great, great worry.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And well, and because of the position the United States holds for the rest of the world, when it happens here, it's almost like giving other places permission to do the same.
Yeah, because it's not going to be reported the same.
Right.
In other places, and it's not going to be given. It's not going to be. So the idea is that, you know, if this can happen in the United States, where there's like this adherence to rule of law, etc., etc., than in places that aren't as strict or stringent. You know, it's just a
battle. It can become a free for all.
Yeah.
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 So I'm also interested in the different sizes mm-hmm. of the works mm-hmm. because, like I said, the hoodie is huge, mm-hmm. but then there are these tiny little pieces that are like 2x3.
Yeah.
And they don't even look like a, I don't know what normal is, but they don't look like a normal work of art that you would see in a gallery. Like it literally looks like a post-it that was just kind of applied mm-hmm. to the wall. Mm-hmm. So what is the significance of the size changes?
Okay. I think that's more
about
of like
modernism.
You can. I'd love for you to talk about modernism. You took Robert Hobbs as a modernist postmodernism class. I did not. I worked in a gallery for a couple of years, and I like looking at art, and part of that is not hitting the same note all the time.
Mm-hmm.
When there's something to be said for that, but that's not part of what I want my mm-hmm. work to speak to necessarily. Not at least not formally. Not
right. Not overall.
In terms of the objects. So I think that when I'm in a space, I'm really thinking about how is the work kind of generating my movements around the space. How is it pulling me this way or that way? And I think that scale is one of the ways that you do that. So get someone. So the big black piece pulls you from all the way in from the front.
Yes.
And then this other thing is there's a few of these little they're called cartouches, and they're little collage elements of that things from books about navigation and exploration that I thought.
Yeah, one of them was like creating a prism through like a mirror yes. and a window, and it was like, but I had to get really close to it. I was like, what is that? Oh, okay, that's a mirror. And it's went, oh, I get it. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's, but I like the dichotomy between that, being able to see this huge thing and then just kind of look to my right and be like, whoa, what's that?
Right. And I think for that piece, I was thinking about that as, it's not, you read it really well, because there's not a lot of, there's no text there that describes it.
Right.
So, I see that as kind of like a diagram that kind of metaphorically describes our exchange, which is kind of like sending kind of signals from remote places to each other.
Because
he's in Trinidad and I'm here. We're lucky to have him here now.
Right.
But most of the time we're trying to communicate about from our remote positions, so to have that next to this piece about Trayvon, where he's talking about having accessing permission to comment on American criminal justice and race in America, and I honestly am also getting some permission to comment on this, whereas as a white man, I don't necessarily make it my practice to make images of people of color, because I feel like there's a power in that I don't want to necessarily,
you don't want to mess it up. Hands.
I don't want to mess it up.
Yeah.
I don't want to mess it up. And we can do things together that we maybe can't do individually.
Well, I absolutely loved the show. I thought it was really intriguing and thought provoking. And I hope everybody goes to see it, because it's really nice.
We have can I plug the talk?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, do that.
Please do. Yes.
So we have a talk, this Friday night. You can, I think it's at 6 p.m. It's with curator Tasha Grantham and other exhibiting artists, Rashawn Rucker, and Nikolai and I will be there talking about the work. You can check Second Street's website for the time details, but I'm pretty sure it's at 6, Second Street Gallery in downtown Charlottesville.
Awesome. And the show runs from December 2nd to January 19th, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right, so we've got a little over
time.
A month.
Yeah, you can have your
to go by
your Christmas meal and then come afterwards.
There you go. It's seriously, the show is really interesting. When I walked in, I was like, "Oh, this is going to be different."
Well, thank you for giving us a chance to talk about it.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
55 minutes past the hour. Now it's time for the part of the show that everyone's been waiting for. It's Leslie's weekly rant.
Aw, thank you, Clinton. So, it's funny how we go in full circle. I was listening to the Indigo Girls the other day, and as Emily sang, every 5 years or so, I look at my life and have a good laugh. I had a laugh myself, out loud. I suppose it's inevitable during the holidays to become retrospective. And so it's happened to me. But it's better than in years past, when the holidays have brought an amount of melancholy that at times had been larger than life. This holiday season, I have so much to be happy about. There are new and old friendships, and work is good. There's art being made that I believe in and that is challenging. There's love. Oh my, there's love. There's wine and whiskey and trips being planned. There are things to look forward to and things to look back on and be thankful. So, again today, I turn to Khalil Gibran on joy and sorrow. Then a woman said, "Speak to us of joy and sorrow." And he answered, "Your joy is your sorrow unmasked. And the self-same well from which your laughter arises was oftentimes filled with your tears. And how else can it be? The deeper that sorrow carves into your being, the more joy you can contain. Is not the cup that holds your wine the very cup that was burned in the potter's oven? And is not the lute that soothes your spirit the very wood that was hollowed with knives? When you are joyous, you look deep into your heart, and you shall find it is only that which has given you sorrow that is giving you joy. When you are sorrowful, look again in your heart, and you shall see that in truth you are weeping for that which has been your delight. Some of you may say joy is greater than sorrow, and others say, nay, sorrow is the greater. But I say unto you, they are inseparable. Together they come, and when one sits alone with you at your board, remember that the other is asleep upon your bed. Verily, you are suspended like scales between your sorrow and your joy. Only when you are empty are you at standstill and balanced. When the treasure keeper lifts you to weigh his gold and his silver, needs must your joy or your sorrow rise or fall. So this week, I want you to take a moment and think about what has caused you sorrow this year. And instead of reliving it, remember it with thankfulness for the lesson. You can even thank that person for teaching it to you. Fill your cup for a new year. Fill your cup so you can use all of that in your next artistic endeavor, so you can use it in your life. And that's the weekly rant.
Well.
Oh, God.
Well. Well said, Leslie.
Aw, thank you, Clinton.
Although it's becoming less a weekly rant and more a moment with Khalil Gibran.
I love Khalil, though. He's so great. He's so great.
He's so great. He's like,
yes, seriously, the prophet.
So much that you're becoming
that
like his ghostwriter? Is that what it is?
Seriously, like the prophet is like a manual for your life.
Is he getting a kickback from you for all this?
Honey, he's dead, baby. He's dead.
You know. Did you kill him? What?
No, I didn't kill him. Oh, my God.
Thanks for listening. This is Homegrown, your show about local art. We want to thank our guests today, Liz Howard, Perry Medlin, and Deborah Ehrenstein from Guys and Dolls, and Matt P. Shelton and Nikolai Knoll from Second Street Gallery. Go to see Guys and Dolls. Go to see Matt and Nikolai's piece, Contested Bodies, at Second Street Gallery from December 2nd to January 19th. We also want to thank Khalil Gibran, who apparently is providing almost all of our content these days.
You know what? You know what? You and I are going round after this show. You hear me?
See you next week.
Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.